Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with Sim Longa. And Sim, a lot has happened since the last time we spoke. Again, I hope everybody got a chance to listen to the volleyball preview that you and friend of the listener, Nate, did. Really good stuff there. We will make sure to talk about volleyball here on this podcast, as they had a really good weekend and advanced to the Sweet 16. Spoiler alert. But first, we got to start with the big news, and that is the new head football coach, the 38th head coach in Purdue football history. And if you listen to our preview show, it was one of the five names that we discussed. And honestly, Sim, when we talked about it on that podcast, I don't think you and I really spent a lot of time talking about the head coach Barry Odom. And I don't know if it was, I think I won't speak for you, but I think for me, I really didn't think we would be that aggressive in going after him. I thought kind of with this success that he would have, that he would kind of he had kind of priced himself out of kind of what Purdue was looking for. I was wrong. And they went ahead and hired Barry Odom, who as you know, was at Missouri for a while and then UNLV the past 2 years. But some kind of your initial thoughts on the hiring here.
You're right. I mean, I remember kind of briefly just like chatting about him when we were like kind of at, when we were having that episode of like following, Walters being let go. And I wasn't, I kind of in the same boat as you. I just kind of, I figured he was going to be one of the coaches who in this off season was going to be highly sought after. So I thought that he would be a guy who maybe wouldn't be so willing to jump at Purdue calling. I wouldn't say to jump at an opportunity because, obviously, like, when you have other suitors who are coming about, if someone comes around and gives you the right offer, you just close the deal. We seal the deal then. But just knowing how, like you said, just knowing how aggressively we went after him, I think just I watched. I finally got an opportunity to watch his introductory press conference, and he very much he sounds like a guy who really does fit the ethos of Purdue. Like I was telling you before we started recording, he seems to me like he could be like the right guy at the right time, in terms of, you listen to him speak, and he very much so sounds like a guy who understands how he got to the place he is at today, in terms of like the bumps and bruises that he's taken in some of his previous coaching stops. I think he has an idea of, okay, what is what it takes to kind of build a successful and sustainable program from both the good and the bad, and seems very much so like he wants to do that here. That he sees an opportunity of not just being able to turn things around quickly, but also being able to have a level of sustainability that I think we all would appreciate and like, and would be very, very refreshing, because we haven't really seen that. We've had, a year or two where, like, yeah, we were good, but like in terms of having that sustained success, and just even to where we get to a point where, like, yeah, we're just making a bowl game every year, that's not even something we've necessarily been able to have. So I think he's just, I think Babinski kind of like, I think he really, when I think people had doubts when he came out and said that he'd been kind of looking at, looking at candidates for a while, for several weeks. And I think people were like, oh, I'm not sure if he's actually true about it or not. But in terms of the speed and the clip at which he moved of getting Odom, it definitely lets you, it definitely makes me feel, I should say, definitely makes me feel like he had been doing his research, and so once the opportunity presented itself to be able to start having some conversations, he kind of knew in his head, like, hey, this is a guy who on paper he kind of sounds like he kind of, I mean, he kind of seems like he might be a good fit here. And then when, as he's as Babinski even said in the presser, he's talked about how when they kind of got off the phone after that first time, he knew, like, yeah, I think we really, really might have something here. And I'm sure, you know, when he told Odom about like what we're planning on doing in terms of like the revenue sharing, and in terms of the resources that he'll be provided, knowing that this would be a better situation for him in those regards versus what he would be leaving at UNLV, I think it probably made it to where I think Babinski kind of approached it of like, I want to give him an offer that he can't say no to. Not without going crazy, but just something that lets you know, hey, look, you come here, you're gonna have the resources, you're gonna have everything that you need at your disposal to build a successful program, and I've watched you do it with, you know, lesser resources. So like, and obviously this is a bigger opportunity. So I'm fine with it. I guess I guess to a long-winded way of answering your question, I'm fine with it. I'm just kind of eager to see how he's able to fill out the roster, who he's able to retain, who might still leave, who's able to bring in that type of stuff, and like who he, yeah, how he fills out his staff.
Yeah, there's most definitely still a lot of unanswered questions. And I was kind of the same way. I think when I first heard the announcement, I was kind of like, man, like, all right, like, that's fine. But I think too, as you kind of dig deep into kind of what he's done, especially at UNLV. I think there's a lot to really like about it. Like, one thing that really stood out to me was for as much coaching experience as he's had, he's still relatively young in the coaching world too, at only 48 years old. So I feel like he's a good combo of like coaching experience as well as on the younger side. And then just a couple of things I wanted to highlight from his 2 year stint at UNLV that I think kind of should make Purdue fans really excited about kind of how he can not only how he can turn a program around, but how he can turn a program around pretty quickly. So he in his In his two-year stint, they won 19 games, 9 games in last year and 10 games this season, which was the winningest 2 year stretch in UNLV school history. He also reached double-digit wins for just the third time in program history ever. And then his 19-8 mark with the Rebels, in 2 years, the past 5 years leading up to that, so from 2017 to 2021, UNLV won a total of 20 games. So, it's not like he went to UNLV and like was, took over for like a coach who left and had a
Had
awesome
something in
talent pool.
place.
Kind of
Yeah.
took like
And
he
rode the
went in there.
coattails
It
of it.
was a program that was at the bottom. They had won, like I said, they had won 20 games in 5 years leading up to him being there. And then he wins 19 games in 2 years. He was the Mountain West Coach of the Year both years there. Took them to the Mountain West Championship game. They had never been there before. So, I mean, like I said, there's a lot to like about him. He's shown he can build a program quickly. But again, too, like you see some of these other coaches being hired, and two kind of specifically, obviously, that everybody's going to look at Belichick at North Carolina. You got Rich Rodriguez going back to West Virginia, two kind of
What's that about?
older guys.
Yeah.
Barry, still on the relatively young side, but it's not like, he's brand new to coaching either, which I think
Right.
is something that should really make Purdue fans excited.
Yeah, no, I agree. Is that I think he just like you said, he's a younger coach, but he has that head coaching experience, but he's also not somebody who's been around the block for so long that you want you you know you worry about, well, is his style still relevant? Because like when you mentioned Rich Rodriguez, and you know obviously at the peak of his powers, you know, West Virginia was a monster, but then you know he had a couple stops afterwards, and it's almost like you know his style, his system or whatnot, it just wasn't it wasn't working out. And so you know to see him obviously back at West Virginia, like, might give, you know, those West Virginia fans a case of the warm and fuzzies, but it doesn't necessarily mean that a guy that's that far in his coaching career is going to suddenly be able to kind of turn things around. And yeah, like you were pointing out the stats of what Odom's done at UNLV, and like you said, he very clearly has an idea of what he needs to do to build a program and turn it around relatively quickly, which is what he knows he needs to do here. He knows that while yes, there will be a level of patience, especially in this first year. In the overall scheme, we need to be seeing improvement. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that was ultimately the dooming of Walters, of Ron Walters, was that from game one to game 12, you didn't see anything that we were improving on. So yeah, you could talk about how the schedule was hard, but there wasn't something that you could turn to and say, but this has gotten this that as you know this aspect of the game has gotten better for Purdue from Indiana State until the IU game. You didn't have anything to say like that. And he very much so sounds Odom very much sounds like a guy who knows, like, we don't have a lot of time, and so we need to hit the ground running. And he knows that, like, look, we're gonna build championship habits from day one, and just kind of watch me work. He didn't go as far as saying like what Kurt Cignetti did in terms of like, I win, Google me. But very, like, again, I just think he really just gives off a very Purdue energy. He really, really does. Just when you hear the way that he talks, it just very much so sounds like, oh yeah, like, okay, shit, we're about to roll up the sleeves and like really get into some shit.
Yeah, and I think too, one thing to kind of piggyback off of that also is based off of some reports that we've seen, he's already holding the Purdue players that are there to a higher level of accountability than we've seen in a really long time. A lot more discipline already. There was one report, and I'm gonna kind of paraphrase this, but a couple of players were late to the first meeting, and he essentially said, if you're going to be late again, don't show up again. And just holding that one accountability, and two, having that discipline, is quite frankly one of the biggest things that this team has lacked in a while. And so that is one thing that you love to see, because it's one thing that can be changed pretty quickly. And it doesn't matter, like, the talent that you have, it's one thing that you can always count on. And it can help you in a lot of ways too. Just think about all the times we talked this past year about how Purdue shot themselves in the foot with penalties, with just weird mistakes, whether it's special teams letting plays bounce or fumbles, just all those little things add up. And it sounds like he's already trying to clean that up already.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I think that's how it starts, is from day one. And something I thought was interesting in his presser that he talked about was how rosters nowadays, college, speaking obviously about college football rosters, because like they always have turnover, especially like, in this NIL era. So even if you're good, you're going to have some roster turnover anyways. And so I thought it was good and interesting that he pointed that out, because I think there's a lot of people out there who are trying to fight off panic, because you're seeing all these guys who are going into the portal. And it's kind of like, and I feel like he said that as a way of like, look, like, don't freak out if you see a lot of guys going, because like turnover on a roster is normal. But like, we'll be able to get, like, it was almost like he was saying, like, well, I he feels confident that we'll be able to get guys who will come in and adapt to the system. And like you said, the fact that he's kind of implementing this change of individual accountability from day one, it's the type of stuff you like to see, because as you're bringing guys in to the program, whether it's recruits or it's people out of the transfer portal, you already have a baseline of what the expectation is for how you conduct yourself. And that's before we even get onto the field. So that this probably applies to team meetings. It'll apply to I imagine, like, study tables, workouts, stuff like that, of like, this is the way that we're going to go about our stuff, and we're holding everyone accountable to it. And that's like a that's a you you know, that's a really refreshing and encouraging thing to see from Coach Barry Odom.
Yeah. And like you said now, though, too, like now kind of as we look forward now, though, like there's still a lot left to be done. Like, yeah, you got the head coach. You had to get him quick. You acted on it. Seems like you got the guy that you really wanted. You know, there's hopefulness there, but you still, you know, now you got to go get an OC. You got to go get a DC. You got to fill out this staff. You got to hit the portal. You got to recruit the guys who were on your team who entered the portal and try to get them there. Because honestly, basically everybody on the Purdue roster down here seemed like entered the portal. Right. And a caveat to that was to be expected. Most of the players like would be doing themselves a disservice if they didn't do that.
Right.
Just to see what was happening. So please don't hold that against any of the guys. Like, it's not like they're bashing Purdue or, you know, hate it and wanted to get out. But now, like, you're going to have to recruit those guys because those dudes are getting recruited. And I don't know if you've seen reports, but like Dylan Tanaman is getting recruited by like the top schools in the country. Oregon is having him on a visit. Ohio State, I think, is going to have him on a visit. Max Clair is going to generate all kinds of names. Will Helt, I think, was visiting Texas A&M and LSU. You already had Muhammad Musa already commit to Brom at Louisville. So you really got to, like, recruit the guys that were on this roster, the guys that are in the portal now, high schoolers, you know.
Yeah, there's everyone has to be resold on why they should be at Purdue.
Yeah, and that's just part of, like, you have to do that while hiring a staff, while, you know, recruiting guys in the
While coaching up the guys who you already know who are there. So whether it's the people whether it's the young guys who committed during signing day, and if they, let's say, they get on campus early, there was a defensive player who already took their name out the portal because they were like, yeah, like, I see what's you know, basically saying, I see the vision and I want to tap in. But yeah, he's got a lot to do. Like you said, just
first walk on. So I don't know, like, you know, I don't know how good he was. I don't know anything about him, but I did see that as well, where he already said that he was ready to run it back. You know, and, you know, to whoever was recruiting prior to Barry, too, give them credit to bring in, you know, we talked about a few guys that they signed already. So you got those guys that you're trying to build, you know, trying to bring in, too. Like, there's going to be some long nights at the football complex here these next few weeks.
Yeah. But I imagine he knew that. I imagine that was, you know, that was, he knew what he was getting himself into. So I believe he's up for the task. He very much so sounds like it. And I think just now is just the time that we just have to wait and see, and you just try to not overreact too much one way or the other, because the true test of this team is not going to be until sometime later this year. I mean, excuse me, till next year, next September. That's when we're going to be able to really see, okay, what do we have now?
Yeah. And not only is it going to be, you know, not only, like you said, did he know it and up for the test, but you got to think it's kind of, you know, on like one level, exciting too, to kind of build the program back up and do it your way and, you know, bring in guys that you want and all of that. And from a fan perspective too, anytime you get, you know, the brand new shiny toy, that's always exciting too. So it'll be very fun and interesting to kind of see how he builds out his staff, how he builds out the roster. And like you said, try not to overreact, which in this day and age is very hard to do. But, you know, especially if some of those top guys go other places, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
You know, and this is no knock on those guys, but you got to remember this was a 1-11 team. So sometimes, you know, change isn't always bad, and that's for everybody involved.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to kind of see how all this plays out. I would think we'll get some news kind of on like the OC and the DC and the staff, I would think would be the next steps. And you know, because you're going to want those guys to help you recruit and stuff and kind of build that foundation and change that culture like you talked about. And Barry kind of hinted that he had been interviewing or talking to some guys. He, of course, didn't say any names. And it really doesn't narrow it down, but said, you know, that they're all getting prepped for
bowl games.
So, you know, that doesn't narrow it down a whole lot. But you got to think those decisions are going to be happening here. I would say by Christmas, probably you would want to have that staff pretty well built out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Because again, yeah, you're having the head coach position filled. Yeah, that helps. But obviously he can only do so much in terms of trying to, yeah, to build this program. You know, he needs some help. And again, I think what also should give us all some encouragement, I think you mentioned it earlier, is just the fact of like the amount of resources that he's getting from the school now. That I don't think we've ever seen Purdue, like the university itself, in terms of the way that it's going to support in particular, and obviously in this particular instance, if they're talking about the football team. I don't think we've ever seen the level of support that they're insinuating that they're going to be having now. So that also gives me a lot of gives me a more positive outlook on what could happen.
Yeah, now it's time for them to literally put their money where their mouth is,
literally,
and see what they can do. Especially, you know, we talked about too, just on the NIL front too, because you got to get that right, and get all that worked out. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see kind of how the staff gets built out and kind of what areas he focuses on. You got to think like the OC hire, with him being a defensive minded head coach, and really, you know, even as an assistant, almost all of his experience was on the defensive side. So, you know, much kind of like how it was with Walters when he brought in the OC and kind of let that OC run the offense. Now, obviously, with Walters and Harrell, it didn't work out. But I would think it would work the same, where whoever is going to be the OC is kind of going to have free reign, you know, calling the plays. It won't be like, you know, you think back to when Jeff Brohm was the head coach and Brian was the OC. Jeff was calling most of the plays here as the head coach. Right. Whoever is going to be the OC, you would think is going to be, you know, handling the offense there.
Yeah, they're probably going to be running more so by themselves. And I think even like with the DC, like you said, with him being a more defensive minded coach, is he probably more so wants to have someone who, you know, they share the same philosophy on defense. But, you know, he said the same thing that you know, that Walter said at his introductory presser, in terms of, as much as, you know, you want to be able to put in your desired system or systems really on both sides of the ball, you have to first you know, assess what personnel you have, and then from who you have personnel wise, you need to be able to figure out from their skill sets what best suits them. So you know, I don't expect for him to be able to hire two guys and all of a sudden we're just seeing their, you know, respective philosophies on offense and defense just like kicking from day one. But like you said, I think the on the offensive side of the ball, that's very much so going to be like, okay, well, yeah, you're kind of on your, like you can do as you need. And then I think the defense is probably, yeah, more so where you might be able to see more of Odom's collaborating more with whomever the hire is.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see. And we'll discuss it all as the news breaks. But you got to think that that'll probably be the next step, is getting that staff held out there. But I think we're both in agreement. Like, we're excited for the hiring. It seems like a good fit. But now
Let's see what
let's
happens
get these next
next.
boxes checked off and kind of see where we're at here.
Right. I don't even like football, so straight.
That's a lie, but okay.
Okay.
Well, then, since you don't like football at all, let's switch gears and go over to the hardwood,
I'm set,
and
bro.
talk about the basketball team. Had a very up and down week last week. So last time we spoke, we talked about how, we've been talking kind of this 6-game stretch that the Boilermakers are in. Starting with the tournament out in San Diego, and then the two Big Ten games, and then the two SEC games, one in Indy this weekend, and then one next weekend in Birmingham. We've kind of broke those down. And obviously, the Boilers went out and won the tournament out in San Diego. Then they come back here, and we were saying, all right, well, like if they can win these two games, then you're kind of playing with house money there. You're getting off to a 2-0 start in the Big Ten, and everything's all rosy. And we were dumbasses to think that because Purdue came out against Penn State for the second time on the road, played quite frankly just bad. And
That might be
we
kind.
kind of hinted at it on the podcast last time that like this was the same thing that happened last year. The Boilermakers lost their first Big Ten game on the road. So these things happen. The sky's not falling. This is still a really, really good team. But for me, the one takeaway from that game that worries me is they lost the exact same way they lost at Marquette.
Marquette, yeah.
They got outplayed. Defensively, Penn State just took it to another level, and Purdue did not match that level at all. And if it wasn't for some of the guys on the bench late, I think it was CJ Cox and Brian Waddell, but I'll be honest, I turned it off. It could have looked much worse than what it ended up being, like an 11-point loss. But just kind of curious your thoughts because, this is now two games on the road, two games where they have not handled defensive pressure well. They turned the ball over damn near every time, it seemed like, in the first half. And so, like, what's your level of concern with them? And when I say them, just with the team and how they have played in these two games with at Marquette and at Penn State.
I don't know if I necessarily have a level of concern more as it's like, I guess I'm kind of seeing the, I'm seeing, I'm starting to see what the reality of this Purdue team can be. And I think that one of the similarities between Penn State and Marquette is they have, is they guard the perimeter well. They will speed you up. They will make you turn the ball over, and they make you have live ball turnovers. So Purdue had what 24, that 24 turnovers. I can't even believe I'm saying that. That 24 turnovers and 14 of them were in the first half. But more importantly, Penn State got 32 points off of those turnovers, whereas Penn State turned the ball over 16 times actually, but we only got 10 points off of them. So clearly we weren't able to take advantage of their turnovers the same way they were for us. And I guess where I'm more so thinking now is I'm just kind of like, all right, so is any time that like anytime we run into a team that has that has good guards, whether that, like I mean good guards and even some guard depth, and they're good at guarding the perimeter, that could prove to be problematic for us because so much of our offense runs through Braden. You see when guy like I think the Penn State game was another example of like you see what can happen with some of these other guys when the ball's in their hand a bit more than what they're used to. You know, I mean some of the stuff was just again, it was just like you said with the Marquette game, it was just like basic stuff that we were turning the ball over, poor passes into the post, trying to make cross court passes, just overall not being strong and secure with the basketball. These are the common things that have plagued Purdue in both of their losses. And you could even say that even in the Ole Miss game, when it was looking like it was going to start to get away from Purdue, they were doing a lot. They were doing that same thing. So to me, this team will, more so than anything, even like with the rebounds and even with the shooting, their ability to take care of the basketball was, I think, is going to be the greatest indicator of how the game will play out for them. Because if you're taking care of the basketball, but you're not shooting well, if you're defending and you're still being relatively good on the boards, you'll be in more games than you won't. But if you're out here turning the ball over, giving another team who's not necessarily shooting great themselves, I mean, it didn't help that Penn State shot 65% in the first half, because that just makes all those turnovers all that more damning. But if you're I lost my train of thought. Nonetheless, if you're turning the ball over a lot, allowing a team to get extra possessions, you're almost certainly going to lose. You're almost certainly, especially in a conference like the Big Ten, where you really don't have any nights off. And as we've talked about before, you know, especially for Purdue, you know, when we go on the road and you go on the road against an unranked opponent, there's an opportunity for a court storm. So like, that's always an even more hostile environment than maybe it would regularly be. So, you know, and momentum can just kind of be, it can be a snowball effect. So, you know, you have one turnover and all of a sudden, you know, it's two, three out of four possessions, four out of six possessions. And now all of a sudden you go from being, you know, down two to down 12. And that's kind of how it felt like, is that it just was like, all right, all of a sudden, like we were down like two, maybe three. And then I felt like I looked back and all of a sudden they were down like 22 or something like that. Like you said, that the game, like the final was only an 11-point difference. But if you watch that game, it was much worse than that. And even at its worst, it felt worse, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And just to kind of put a bow on the Penn State game and the court storming, I'm all for fans storming the court, having a good time. But if you're going to chant overrated, and
you
then
storm
the court,
you shouldn't be storming after that. Because if you're overrated, you're supposed to lose. Like you're supposed to beat them then.
Those two things don't make sense. Also, you were favored to win the game.
That too.
So it wasn't even enough. But I digress. So after that game, then the Boilermakers come back Sunday to Mackey Arena, take on, again, a really good Maryland team. Like, they have some dudes. Derek Queen is going to be a legit pro, probably a lottery pick, just a monster. And it felt, for a game in early December, it just had the feel of a monster game. I think the players could sense that. Like, you never want to start off, obviously, 0-2 in the Big Ten. You know, you want to protect your home court. The Boilermakers ran the table in the Big Ten at home last year, which would, you know, obviously help them win the championship there. And I always think back to a classic quote that Gene Katie had, and he would always say that the way you win the Big Ten is you win all your games at home, and you win half the games on the road. And so it just felt like a monster game, and the Boilers were able to win late. They really, it looked like they still kind of were shell-shocked from the Penn State game early in that Maryland game. It was a very rusty start. But in that second half, man, did they turn it on to a whole nother level. And then to your point about the turnovers too, I just wanted to highlight. So after having 24, they come in and they play Maryland, who came into that game as the ninth nationally ranked team in defensive turnover percentage. And they only had 8 turnovers the entire game, which was one of the reasons why they won the game. Another reason why they won the game was freaking Braden Smith, man. That was like kind of his his game, you know, we've been asking for a game like this for a while. You know, like this was a game that proves why you were the preseason national player of the year. You know, 9 of 15 from the field, 5 of 9 from three. So 24 points, 10 assists, played the entire game, and Sim only had one turnover. Like the, like his game was just insane. He was hitting big threes, layups, really had like the pick and roll going with Trey. I don't like it's hard to find anything bad that Trey did in that game. Like he just took his game to another level. And like we said, this is that's the Braden that we've been waiting to kind of see. And man, did he break out in a big way and at a time when Purdue really needed it.
No, I mean, the point I was going to call out, and you mentioned it, is the fact that he played all 40 minutes and he only had one turnover. And you know, for us to have a stat line of 24, 10, and 4 when you play 40 minutes, and he had those 24 points on 9 of 15 shooting, he had 5 threes. I mean, the only wrong thing he did is that he missed a free throw. You know, he's 1 of 2 from the line, it seems. You know, that rather, the only wrong thing it seems he did is that he missed, you know, he missed the one free throw. But yeah, like you said, and these are the type of games I feel like we're going to need more of from Braden. It might not be like, it might not look like, you know, it might be 24, 10, and 4, but I think that, again, like I go back to what I was saying earlier after, when, you know, when you asked me about the Penn State game, like as I kind of understand more of the reality of what this Purdue team is, the reality for me is that, like, Braden has to have some, he has to have like an efficiently good game. I feel like more nights than not, for us to really, you know, go to the places that we want to go to. Of course, like, you know, there's other factors, like we've talked about, you know, needing a good performance out of Cam and or Miles, and then some production off the bench. If obviously that's always, we feel like we've been saying that honestly though for the better part of the last like 4 or 5 years. But like Braden playing the, like this level, at this level. So again, I'm not trying to make it seem like, hey, he has to have 24 and 10 every game, but him playing in that way, and like you mentioned, in the second half, he really put his imprint on the game and turned things around for us. I mean, we shot 37.1% in the first half, and then shot 61% in the second half. And yeah, I mean, like that's how you go from being down 5 after the, you know, after the first half, to then, you know, winning by 5. And it was a very back and forth game too, even late, you know, just trying to close the trying to seal the deal. So I mean, hats off to Braden for his performance, because we needed that. We especially like that performance in the second half. You needed him to just kind of be like, all right, like, yeah, we're not going to start 0-2 in conference, and I'm gonna do what's necessary now. Like just screw it. Like if I gotta score, then I gotta score. If we need a bucket, okay, cool. I'll run this pick and roll action, and you know, I gotta get Trey involved, because you know, we need someone to kind of cancel out what Derek Queen is doing to us, you know. He was everything that you needed him to be, Braden. And yeah, I can't applaud his performance enough.
Yeah, it was really just outstanding. And just to kind of highlight like how rare a game like this happens, he's the first Purdue player to have a 20-point, 10-assist double-double since Troy Lewis did it against IU in 1988. So, you know, these type of games don't happen obviously that often. You know, he had a career high 5 3-pointers too. And I thought it was very interesting in the post game on Big Ten Network, John Beilein said it was a Trey Burke performance. And I think that was, you know, that's a pretty high compliment because Trey Burke at Michigan at his time, that was like peak point guard play. Trey was balling there. And so anytime you're compared to that, you had a pretty damn good game. And just one other thing to kind of highlight when you talked about how these are the type of games you need from Braden, I'll lump Fletch in here just for this stat. But and this was from the game notes after the game, but Purdue is now 25-1 when Braden and Fletcher combine to score at least 25 points. 25-1. And, 25 points between those two is not a crazy amount.
I would expect that every game,
Obviously
unless
the
like
past,
other guys went off.
obviously now it's a lot easier because you don't have Zach Edey getting 30-10. But that is just an insane stat to me. 25-1 when they combine to score 25. Like, that's what you need. And Braden, really kind of just put the team on his back, and had, just a monster game. And then, I feel like we always just say this, but again, ho-hum, Trey had 21-8 and 2 assists.
Made all his free throws too.
On 9 of 18, he was he. I think for me, the most impressive thing for Trey, not only like you said, he was 3 of 3 from the line, but he really got off to a rough start shooting. He finished 9 of 18 from the field, but in the second half, he was 7 of 10. So when you really needed him, he was right there with Braden. And had a good game. He helped. Julian Reese was basically a non-factor in this game and fouled out
Fouled
like
out,
pretty early on in the second half. And Trey had a lot to do with that as well. Like, just a really good game. And like, we're at the point now where you almost like, this was Trey's fourth 20-point game this year already. Like, you almost just expect like 20-8 from him now. Like, if Purdue is going to win, it seems like you're going to need at least that from Trey.
Yeah, that's definitely, again, like, it was mentioned in terms of what Purdue would need from Braden. You're right. With Trey, you need upwards to 20, and you're gonna need upwards to and upwards you're gonna need upwards of 20 and 10 from him every night. And you feel better, but like you said, he didn't start off the game as well, but to be able to bounce back in the second half, he also too was part of why we were able to, to be able to turn things around. And one other thing I will point out about Trey is that he only had one turnover against Maryland. He had seven against Penn State. So he himself, needing to be stronger, better with the basketball, and he definitely cleaned those things up from the Penn State game to the Maryland game. And so again, it's just like between Trey, Fletch, because I'll throw him in there, and Braden, you need these efficient, more like cleaner performances from them. And it's kind of like, does it sound like I'm asking them to play perfect every game? I mean, I don't, even if I was, I mean, I'm not, but like, even if I was, like, who would fault me for that? But the reality of it is that when, if they play poorly, then we collectively will play poorly. And so the fact that they were able to bounce back from that tough game at Penn State, almost just kind of be like, all right, look, it's one game, it is what it is, and we can go back. And like you said, it seemed like in that first half they were still kind of stuck in that same rut that they were in at Penn State. But then to be able to turn that around and be able to get that solid second half from Trey, and then just have a more dominant second half, where impose his will from Braden. Those are both those are two things right there that you can point to of like, yeah, this is exactly why this Purdue team will continue to win, like has been successful to this point, and why they will continue, like why they'll continue to be successful, provided they're getting these type of performances out of those guys.
Yeah, and just kind of one last guy to highlight. It was really good to see Cam have the game that he had. Like we've talked about, like, you're gonna need either Cam or Miles to have, a really solid, efficient game. The good thing about this team is you don't need them both, every night. You really just need one of those two guys to step up. And this time it was Cam's turn. He had kind of had a quiet past couple of games, it feels like. But man, he really broke out 15 points, which was his season high. 5 of 8 from the field, 4 of 4 from the line. I think those were all within the last minute or two. So, you know, high pressure free throws, hit the big three late on just a pretty play that Purdue loves to run. And a good find by, I think it was Trey, who found Cam open in the corner for
Corner.
just a monster three,
Yeah.
you know, where he's shooting 19 of 35 from three this year. But, you know, just a really good game. He only had three rebounds, but some other guys stepped up on the glass. He had two block shots. But yeah, like we talked about, like you either need Cam or Miles to kind of have a game like this. And man, Cam was money down the stretch. And obviously that lob play too, man. I've watched that replay probably 100 times. It was just
Right.
so perfect. Like, chef's kiss on that one.
Right. Well, and I would do I would go a step further, and I would say that between Cam and Miles, what one does, the other needs to do the other. So like Cam had 15 points, but as you mentioned, he only had 3 rebounds. Miles had 4 points, but he had 7 rebounds. And so for me, I'm like, between those two, if it's Miles who's scoring, then like Cam, if you're not, if it's not, if you're not, if you're not on that night or something like that, like you need to be crashing these boards, you know? So if I see you only have, 4, 6 points, I need to see you having 6 to 8 rebounds. And the same goes for Miles. And but yeah, you're right. It was he's, you know, he's had a couple lackluster games. So for him to be able to have a good game like he did against Maryland, hitting timely shots, making free throws. I mean, he didn't have any turnovers, so he just a lot cleaner game for Cam, and you like that. And now again, I think the challenge I have for him is the same one as Miles, is like, can we like can out of them can we stack good games, one after the other after the other after the other? Because once we can get consistent performances again, that elevates the ceiling of what this Purdue team can do.
Yeah, I would agree. And to your point too, like another good game for Cam. He doesn't need to come out and score 15 points again, you know, for him to get a quote unquote good game. But,
Right.
you know, just to, you know, knock down a couple of threes, hit him on a lob, get some rebounds, like just, you know, I think Cam is a guy that just seems to really make impactful plays. Like whenever he is getting that dunk or hitting a three or hitting like free throws late, they're always at big times, it feels like, with Cam specifically.
Yeah, he has a tendency, he's starting to get a tendency, I mean, a knack for hitting like timely threes. And like you mentioned, he had a big one on had the big one on Sunday. And yeah, man, I just, like you said, he doesn't necessarily have to, a good game for him, the metric isn't just like, hey, you have to hit these stats in order to have a good game. There's other ways that he can have a good game, and so it's not just the scoring, but yes, his ability to score, it does just do so much more for us. So shout out to you, Cam.
Yes, sir. Now, keep it up, because as we've talked about, one of the toughest schedules in the country, you got
Gets
two
harder.
really big games. You know, it kind of feels almost barometer type games. Like there seems to be kind of a little back and forth, like on Twitter and things like that. Like, is the Big Ten the better conference, or is the SEC the better conference? And Purdue has a chance to put two really big stamps on the Big Ten being the better conference, with two really big games here, on Saturday and then next week, in Birmingham against Auburn. But they will play, Texas A&M will be ranked 22 in the most recent polls. That game will be this Saturday in Indianapolis, the Indy Classic. So instead of the Crossroad Classic, now you get the Indy Classic, and you get Buzz Williams and the Aggies coming to Indy. And it's not going to be an easy game at all. They are a very good squad. Anytime you get a Buzz Williams coach team, you know they're going to kind of bring that defensive intensity, and they're really going to get after you, and they're really going to guard you. And that is the thing that I think is going to be the most interesting to watch. It's probably going to be, we'll probably sound like a broken record as we kind of talk about this throughout the year, but the turnovers is going to be the thing. Like, can Purdue take care of the basketball against another team that's going to really bring that defensive intensity, and can you match that?
Yeah, no, that's I think, yeah, like you said, it's just going to be the great test for Purdue throughout the year. And it's whenever you run into teams like this, because the way you were, you know, the way you're talking about, you know, Buzz Williams led teams, in this case, obviously being A&M, it sounds like a team that is coached by Chris Beard. And then you can look at Penn State, you can look at, you know, Marquette with Shaka Smart. You're facing all of these teams. You're starting to face more and more of these teams who have this high pressure defense, you know, as specifically, you know, at the guard position. And are you going to be able to take care of the ball? If you are, all right, cool. Like, we can, you know, you can see that game being competitive, being close. But if they start being charitable, yeah, then, you know, we'll be able to proceed on our Saturdays a lot faster than we want to. It'll feel like a Saturday for football.
Sadly, that's not a good thing.
Right.
But yeah, kind of like with these two games against the Aggies, and then you got Auburn next weekend. Obviously, you know, you would want like sweep this too. But I think realistically, if you come out 1-1 in these two games, you're going to feel pretty good about where you're at. That would mean you finished 4-2 in kind of this six game block that we've talked about, which is, you know, when we first talked about this, that's kind of what the goal, you know, what the realistic goal was. They like, all right, if you can come out 4-2 in these six, then you're going to feel pretty good where you're at. And so they have a chance to do that. And I think kind of, you know, obviously you want them to win them both, but I think realistically, after the game against Auburn, if you've finished these two 1-1, you're gonna be like, all right, that's kind of what we thought. Now let's go ahead and dive into the Big Ten and really, you know, get after it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, going 2-0 would be a tremendous bonus. I don't even know how we would sound here on the pod if that actually came to. I'm down to find out though, Purdue. So if you're listening, I'm saying, as I know the players do, don't be afraid to go 2-0. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you want to at least be able to get a split, and be able to have at least somewhat of a good feeling, as you know, then we really, like you said, we lock back into fully to the Big Ten season.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting what happens again this Saturday, the 14th, in Indianapolis. It'll be on CBS with it's an early tip, a noon Eastern tip off in Indy. So really kind of excited to see that and see how the Boilermakers do there. Let's switch gears now. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to Sim and our friend Nate break down everything related to volleyball in the NCAA tournament, really encourage you to download that episode and check that out. Credit to both you and Nate, because you guys did a really good job really breaking that down and kind of what to expect. And, you know, I don't think anybody thought that Purdue was going to sweep the second round, and kind of, you know, they kind of cakewalked through the first two rounds. And, you know, I don't want to get too encouraged, because it obviously gets a lot tougher now going to Louisville and playing the Louisville Cardinals on their home floor,
right,
in the Sweet 16 here. But, man, those first two rounds went about as good as you could have hoped for.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're playing lesser well, I don't like saying, I mean, this sounds rude, but like, obviously you're playing as the higher seed. So you're playing teams who you're supposed to beat. And obviously from my conversation with Nate, it wasn't like these were supposed to be foregone conclusions. I think there was definitely some there were definitely some recipes for trouble for Purdue that you know that Nate kind of highlighted. But I think one thing that actually probably helped them out in terms of, especially in the second round match, is the fact that Loyola Chicago beat BYU, because that was, I remember that was the one that Nate was talking about. Yeah, like that could kind of trip the ladies up in terms of, like, because BYU, you know, they've had some really good wins this year. And so that was kind of like an early break for Purdue that went in their favor. And yeah, I mean, then they end up facing Loyola Chicago and get them out in three straight. And that's kind of what you want. You want to just kind of, as if you're the better team, you want to come out, you want to just get it over with as quickly as possible. You know, you allow your opponent to take a set, and now you just created more work for yourself, on top of the fact that the opposing team now probably has a bit more confidence than what they had going into it. So definitely nice to see the ladies not just win those first two rounds, because, you know, we love winning however it happens, but the fact that they were able to get the sweeps, definitely love that. But yeah, I mean, the task just gets significantly harder this Thursday, when they face Louisville, because, yeah, even I do believe that, you know, Purdue will travel pretty strongly. It's not very far, you know, it's not a impossible drive by any means to from West Lafayette down to Louisville, or even if you're in, you know, if you're in the greater Indianapolis area, down to Louisville. But at the end of the day, it's effectively a road game. That's effectively what it is. It's a road game. You're playing Louisville in Louisville at their on you know, on their home floor, and it's going to require, you know, the best volleyball that this team has played this year, I think, to get the job done.
Yeah, and it'll be really kind of exciting to see if they're kind of up for that. But, you know, real quickly too, just wanted to highlight, like, I feel like you can't talk about what Purdue did last weekend and not talk about Miss Hudson and her play. Because, man, she took it to a whole nother level. And this is the time of year where you need your best players to play at their best, and kind of put the team on their back. And that's exactly what she did. And man, did she have a weekend.
Yeah, you hope that, yeah, when you get in the playoff time, that, like, into the, like, rather into the postseason, that everyone's able to elevate the level of their game. And so obviously that even includes your stars. And so for her to go out and have the performance that she had, especially in the Loyola Chicago game, yeah, I mean, it's really good, man. She's just been so good. There's really no other way to say it. And yeah, I'm hoping that you know, she can continue kind of her hot hand against Louisville. And you know, obviously you hope that you can get contributions from, like, Ava and Chloe, excuse me, from Raven and Chloe, you know, like strong performances from them. Not that they've played poorly, I'm not saying that, but obviously you're just hoping you can get just the best performance from these ladies against Louisville. And yeah, again, especially from Ava, it's just kind of hard to see how she continues to she just continues to like to I mean, for me at least, I shouldn't say for us, like, as a whole, but, like, for me at least, it's great to see how she's just continued to leave us in awe, in terms of, like, damn, all right, it's like she's even better than what we expected, or even better than what, you know, you were thinking you were gonna get. So yeah.
Yeah, and did just want to highlight too, it was announced yesterday that she was named the AVCA Midwest Region Player of the Year. So shout out to her with that honor. But like you said, it gets a whole lot tougher. So they will be playing at the Yum Center in Louisville. That'll take place tomorrow, Thursday the 12th. Approximately 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. You know, it's always hard with these tournaments. It'll start 30 minutes after Florida and Stanford play. So it should be roughly about 9:30. Believe it's going to be on ESPN2. It'll either be on or it will be on ESPN2. Again, approximately 9:30 Eastern time. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's gonna be a tall order, to, like you said, to go in there. It's essentially a road game. It should be a pretty decent Purdue crowd. I believe I saw they sold out their allotment of tickets pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think
So,
it sold out like 15
the
seconds.
Purdue people that will be there will, of course, be loud. But, it's going to be tough. You're going to need to, have everybody, like you said, show up and bring their A game.
Yeah, the best is required now, and I remember that from the conversation with Nate. He was talking more so, especially about the support, like some of the, I guess, the lesser known players, about how you're just gonna need every, you're gonna need them to step up. You're gonna need them to step up, and so this is really, really the first, test of that, of like, hey, who's gonna answer the call?
Yep, but that's what kind of makes, these tournaments exciting is, you leave it all out on the line. It's either now or never. No better time than the present to go out there and, best of luck to the ladies. And I hope that on the next one we are talking about in, a deep run here. And to celebrating, what would be a very monumental win, not only for the Purdue program, but for Coach Dave Schondell and for all the ladies as well. So best of luck to them again. That game or that match, excuse me, starts 9:30 p.m. Eastern, approximately. You can catch that on ESPN2. And yeah, that's good luck. I have all the faith in the world. Like I said, that's what make the tournaments fun and exciting.
This
We
dude.
need some more upsets. There were a few upsets in the early rounds, and so why not keep that thing a going and let's just go out and win tomorrow, okay?
A great pep talk.
I should be a coach, man.
Oh man.
But that'll just about do it for this episode. Once again, want to thank everybody for listening, for downloading, for sh sharing this podcast with everybody. Really appreciate all the love and support from everyone. So good luck to the basketball teams. The volleyball team's got a big weekend here, and hopefully on the next episode we are talking about all kinds of Purdue wins. But regardless of what happens, Sim and I will be here to break it all down for you. Once again, thank you everybody, and boiler up.
Yes, sir.